This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. For many of us, the first time the pandemic became real, so to speak, was back in March 2020, when the state of Illinois ordered schools closed for 2 weeks. It was an attempt to slow transmission of what we then called the novel coronavirus. Many child care centers also closed at that time, with a few remaining open for essential workers. Since then, at least for some people, child care has become one of the biggest challenges of the pandemic. By now, many child care centers are back open, with masking and distancing rules in place, but parents remain worried. After all, there are only so many things you can do to help a three-year-old overcome the impulse to socialize, and saying the phrase, "not in your mouth so much, it loses all meaning." Plus, like so many sectors in our economy, finding workers has become a challenge for childcare as well. Listeners, we want to hear from you in this conversation at 800-222-9455. What has been your experience with daycare and pre-K during the pandemic? Do you feel safe with the policies at your child center? 800-222-9455. Maybe you're worried about the longer-term effects of the pandemic, of masking and social distancing on your child's development. 800-222-9455 is the number. Maybe you're returning to the office and your children are returning to daycare for the first time in a year or maybe ever. Again, we want to hear from you at 800-222-9455. We can also take your questions for our guests. Again, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Joining us now are three leaders who work in child care and preschool around Illinois. Nancy Tabota is executive director for the Children's Learning Center, a nonprofit child care center in DeKalb. Nancy, welcome to the 21st.
Hello there. Sorry.
That's all right.
I'm a little slow at unmuting.
It's the Zoom era. We learned to live with that.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. We're also joined now by Lynn Bell, Associate Director of the Child Development Lab at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Lynn, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
And Dr. Mary Beth Cunat is principal at Spectrum Progressive School of Rockford. Her doctorate is in urban education leadership. Mary Beth, glad to have you on the show today as well.
Yes, thanks for the invite.
So, Nancy, I want to begin with you. It's been a challenging year and a half in the pandemic for everyone, but I wonder if you can talk about what specific challenges you've seen and you're still seeing now in childcare.
Well, I would say that ongoing has been, as you mentioned in your opening statement, the biggest challenge has been finding and retaining qualified teaching staff. We've been struggling with that prior to the pandemic. During our three-month closure, we continued to pay all of our staff. We had them doing very unique and creative interactions with our families via Zoom, and we have other applications that we were able to use. And but we had about one third of our staff who left us during the time that we were closed. And so when we reopened with a much smaller enrollment and just to get us started. And we have a waiting list right now that we could probably triple our license capacity, but we cannot enroll even to our license capacity or even 50% of our license capacity because of the lack of ability to hire qualified teachers. So we're not willing to jeopardize the quality of our early childhood program that we have here at Children's Learning Center. So we've worked very hard to get there and we want to maintain that. I think that generally speaking, beyond that crisis, that issue, the pandemic has brought a lot of other challenges for the teaching staff and our administrative staff. We're working longer hours, although our hours of operation are shorter, but a lot of our staff are working 8.5 to 9, maybe even 10-hour days, just to make sure that we get everything done that needs to be done. The deep cleaning and disinfecting in the morning, throughout the day, at the end of the day. We wash the masks every day. I think those are a lot of the challenges that we've been dealing with, and the emotional and mental impact on all of our staff is something I've never seen before. And I've been here for 38 years. So,
wow. Well, yeah, let's come back to some of those points later. Mary Beth Cunat, I want to bring you into the conversation. Anything you want to add to that about the sort of general challenges you've been seeing in the past year and a half?
Yeah, we're a little not-for-profit, you know, independent school. And where I'm seeing right now is we do have a long wait list, but we have the same challenges as Nancy was speaking to, just in terms of staffing early childhood. We've completely redesigned our early childhood program. A lot of it's going to be happening outside whenever possible, so we don't have the mask mandate outside. But what I'm seeing in the last couple of weeks as the new variant has been getting more and more attention is families who've never had their child in school don't feel safe. And so we're seeing movement in our enrollment. Families that had their children here because we were in person for the entire school year last year, we have a track record with those families. We have really great, strong COVID protocols. You know, people who know us and are confident feel, you know, they're coming back. But the new families that have never had their children in school, it's too scary for them. They're just not taking that risk. And if they can stay at home, they do. So that's one. I think just the what Nancy was talking about, the at-home learning for 3-4-year-olds, you have to have short, sweet, wonderful, engaging moments to be able to connect with your teacher via an online platform. They have to be meaningful and fun. They need to be able to find ways to connect with each other because kids want to see kids. You use the word overcoming that urge to socialize. You can't do it with 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds. You have to be able to go with the fact that they need to connect with each other. That's what they're in school for, is for that social emotional learning. And so finding ways, I feel like I've spent the entire last 18 months researching and figuring out ways to continuously engage children online, provide opportunities, but not make demands so that they can have engaging connections with other children and their teachers, you know, from home. And so I've been working really hard at developing those kinds of things with my team. But again, the team's already working at school. They already have kids in front of them. And who's going to do the work of figuring out this, you know, so finding what's there and making it available to families. There's a lot of really good stuff out there, but parents need a tremendous amount of support in terms of helping manage their children at home, especially if they're working themselves. And so creating that kind of resource for families is one of the things we've been working on.
Mm-hmm. All right. In a few minutes, we need to take a break. But before we do, Lynn Bell, I want to ask you same sort of opening question. What are the challenges that you've seen in the last year and a half in the area of child development?
I would say certainly staffing. While here at the university, we were very fortunate when this all rolled out last March, the university made a commitment and we were not in a position of needing to lay off or let any of our staff go. We lost just through choice only a couple of teachers. We immediately went to an emergency license. And during that time, as Nancy had mentioned, our staff were continuing to find ways to reach out and connect with those children who had, for the university, it was spring break. So we thought we were saying, see you later for a week to these children. And for some of them, they're just coming back to school. But I think we're in a different somewhat position. Because of being a lab school, our staffing is organized a little bit differently. So in the year from June until now, we were able to continue our service mission, which is providing childcare for those infants and toddlers and preschoolers. But we did have to figure out ways to continue to be a lab school, which means how do you support research when you're not contact? How do you support student teachers when they can't come and be with the children? So we've spent a lot of our past 18 months figuring out some of that, but we are back to being up at full capacity with 160 children. We are understaffed, and thank heavens we have undergraduate students who are back on campus now and are able to help fill that gap a little bit. But I would say pretty much what everybody else has been experiencing, but we do have the backing of the university, and mm-hmm. we're at about 80% of our full-time staff have been vaccinated, most of us since January, because of the availability of that. And we're all been able to test because of the university.
Yeah.
And so we have been very fortunate through this full 18 months. We have not had a single child contract COVID because of contact here through school.
All right, we're going to take a pause and continue this conversation after a break. 800-222-9455. We'd love to hear your experiences with childcare pre-K during the pandemic. 800-222-9455. More to come. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about childcare, specifically early childcare, pre-K, during the pandemic. It's been a huge challenge for a lot of parents, especially working parents, also trying to take care of their little ones at home. A lot of people have found that is difficult, if not impossible, for them to do. Childcare centers have largely reopened, but as we've heard, there are a lot of staffing shortages. In fact, we got a voicemail from a listener about that. Let's hear what she had to say.
I wanted to share my experience regarding the shortage of workers, not just during the pandemic, but before, during, and after. I have worked in that field now for 41 years. I just stepped down March 31st from directing and teaching, and it is a terrible problem that needs more support from the legislators, not just to the big daycares, but also to the small group homes. And it's been a problem since before the pandemic. You cannot get people to come and work for you because they're either not trained enough, because the standards are over the top, and people are heading the other direction to any other job that will pay them money and require less training.
All right, that message was from Darlene. Thank you for that. Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. We're talking with Mary Beth Cunat, principal at Spectrum Progressive School in Rockford. She has a doctorate in urban education leadership. Also, Lynn Bell, associate director of the Child Development Lab at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Nancy Tabota, executive director of the Children's Learning Center, which is a nonprofit child care center in DeKalb in Illinois, of course. And listeners, as I said, welcome to join our conversation, 800-222-9455. So I want to turn now to the children. And Nancy, a few weeks ago, as you know, Governor Pritzker announced a mask mandate. It applies to all schools, pre-K through high school. And I wonder if you can talk about how hard is it for young children, say a three-year-old, to wear a mask and trying to get them to understand why they have to wear a mask.
That is a very valid point, very valid question. Since we reopened at the end of June in 2020, we have required children two and older, being able to tolerate it, obviously, to wear masks. And so in our infant and toddler classrooms, they are not required to wear masks, and for good reasons, but all of our staff wear masks. We have never veered away from the mask mandate, or we've never changed from a mask mandate, let's put it that way. We have continued to wear masks. We have not seen a problem. Now, when we have a child who is age appropriate to transition from the toddler room to our two-year-old classroom, they're going from not having to wear a mask to wearing a mask. And that transition might take 2 or 3 days, but the children are doing beautifully with it. Sometimes they don't wear them correctly. They will wear them under their nose. But if we remind them that we don't want to see their nose, we can see your nose, you need to cover your nose, they'll cover their nose. It's not a problem. We have not run into any issues as far as the children consistently and appropriately wearing their masks. Our struggle has been more so with the adults, because I think that in some cases it becomes a political issue. And as I was listening to your segment before this one, and it has become a bit of a political issue to say, you can't tell me what I can do. But once they're in this building, they're wearing a mask and never having any problem with it.
Mary Beth Cunat, can I ask you about that same question, and maybe more so about the parents' question? I mean, your school has the word progressive in the name of it. I don't know if that means that your parents tend to self-select more into the pro-mask group, but have you had to deal with maybe kids who are getting a message from their parents that doesn't match what the school's trying to do with masking?
I think that's there are occasions in our community where that's happening, and even to the point where some parents will opt to send their children elsewhere because it's so important to them. But I think the real thing of masks, there are two things that I was concerned about. If it became a local decision about masking and we went for universal masking, which we would have done, then we would have had some of the politics of who's making those decisions, how are those decisions, why did you choose that from, you know, a small group of people. But the real work around it is, I think, to build the culture and community around it, to say, this is how we do it. This is why we're doing it. It's our job to keep you safe. It's your job to help us. And to kind of have a very light attitude and easygoing attitude, never ever make it a situation of punishment and power struggle, to try and look for options for a child who's not remembering, to jump to reminders throughout the day. And 3 and 4 year olds tend to soil their masks because they suck on them. So, you know, you got to have a lot of extra masks on hand, and you got to just kind of say, this is what we're doing right now. This is how we're doing it. And everyone's doing it. Not just, you know, so we were prepared to do that, vaccinated or no, to go into a school year with universal masking. But it is a point of concern for some parents. I have several, you know, parents I'm calling back in the next couple of days to talk about it with them and to say, you know, I'm glad that we don't have a choice. I'm glad ISBE is mandating it for everybody, because I can stand on policy around that and not have it be a point of argument.
Interesting. Yeah. And you said 3 and 4 year olds tend to soil their masks. 3 and 4 year olds tend to soil a lot of things, not just masks, but yes. I want to, Lynn Bell, let me ask you, beyond the masking issue, explaining to children the pandemic in general, how do you go about doing that?
Pretty much the way we talk about any other thing that's going on with them. And early education settings, we definitely are, I talk about it being a contact sport, because it is not something you can do from a 6 foot distance, mask or no. But we talk about, you know, what it means to be sick. We talk about not feeling good. We talk about all the things that, you know, we can do, not just the adults, but the children can do. The whole concept of having classroom communities and taking care of each other, so that one of the things we do that is to stay home if we're not feeling good. Another is to wear our masks. Another is to, as we've been doing forever, pandemic or not, washing hands. If something goes in our mouth that's a toy, it has to go in the sink before it gets back out into everything. So pretty much in a way that they can understand, you know, if they see a child that's getting picked up early by a parent, certainly with our infants and toddlers, they're aware but not tuned in, you know, beyond themselves much. But our two, three, four, and five-year-olds, you know, really understand that concept and of taking care of each other, taking care of themselves, and doing it in a way that it's not scary. This is just one more of those things that, you know, can make us not feel good. And helping parents understand, you know, that their conversations when they think maybe their children are not tuned into them, just to be aware of conversations they're having about those sorts of things, that their little ears are hearing all of that, and just to try and we want to take it seriously, but not make it a super scary thing for them.
Yeah, the little sponge ears. I've had yes. to learn that lesson the hard way myself a number of times. Lynn, you also mentioned at the Child Development Lab at U of I, it's not just childcare; it's also research. Has there been research that looked at how the pandemic is affecting our youngest children and their development?
I am not aware specifically of any. It certainly would be a shame if it's not. But here at the lab, my primary responsibility is operational programming. And Dr. McBride, who's our director, and Dr. Fisher, who is our research manager, work more specifically on hosting the researchers that are doing that. But anecdotally, with the 144 children that we had in care with us during the 2021 school year, we really did not see a lot of what we would say developmental concerns keyed around the pandemic. I would say where more of the challenges came in were those that so many of our families were mom and dad, or mom and mom, dad and dad, whoever the parents were trying to work from home and coordinate all of this sort of thing. So I would say right now, it's probably early to have any definitive idea of what long-term impact there may be. We certainly have at least an entire year group of children who think this is normal. So it will be interesting to see, you know, wherever we end up when this kind of all settles down a little bit, how they fare when we're not doing all these things that we're doing, of not being able to have mom and dad come into the classroom and having to do hallway drop-offs. And oh, we don't always wear masks. But we've really seen the children step up and handle all of these things that we've had to do differently in a much more competent, confident, mature way. So I'm honestly, on a personal front, a little bit surprised by the big concern about expecting school age and high school children to have to wear masks, when those of us who've been with young children for the past 18 months and they've been showing how much better they are at it than we are, that really is not the big concern.
Yeah, it's definitely been my experience as well with my own children. Only a few minutes left in our conversation. Nancy Tabota, I wonder, you mentioned a long waiting list I believe it was you who said a long waiting list to get into your school. What are you hearing from parents? I know how hard it was to find childcare before the pandemic. Now that there's been such a contraction of employment in the industry, maybe that's not the right economic term, but you know what I'm getting at. What are you hearing from parents as they're trying to find some place to take care of their kids? A lot of people are getting called back to work.
Exactly. What we're getting is, on a daily basis, we receive anywhere from 6 to 20 phone calls, various ages, from infants all the way through school age, 12 years of age, that for families that are looking for before and after school care, full day child care, preschool. And we are at our allowed capacity based on the number of teachers that we have. And I fielded a call last week from a parent who she was in tears. She said, "I don't know what else to do." And, you know, I go through the typical process of referring her to our local resource and referral agency. And they have a list of providers, whether it be home-based, group, small group homes, or center-based providers. And she said she's already done that. And so where we had a fallback in the past to refer them to the resource and referral agency, now there's not even that. And even, you know, in the past when we've had this this backlog of spaces and waiting lists that are very large in numbers, we have had we've had some fallback because we could refer them, or there were home-based providers that were willing to take one more child. And families don't want that. They are needing to have, as I think Lynn said earlier, that security of knowing that, or the, I think it was Mary Beth actually who said that, the security of building those relationships with your provider, whatever your provider looks like, and knowing that your child, their child is safe. And now it's just, they don't even have a choice for a safe provider because there aren't providers, enough providers out there. There's not enough slots out there.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're going to have to leave the conversation there. I want to thank you, Nancy Tabota, Lynn Bell, and Mary Beth Cunat. Thank you for being with us today on the 21st and for looking after the littlest members of our Illinois society.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for having us.
And that is it for our show today. I do want to mention, later this week and next, we're going to be looking at COVID-19 from a number of different angles, especially as it relates to school, especially if you're a teacher or parent. We'd love to hear your experiences trying to do right by the children in your care during the pandemic. We'd love to hear from you. You can send us a voicemail, leave us a voice message. Find all the ways to contact us are on our website, 21stshow.org. That's 21stshow.org. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Erica Scalise is our engagement producer, and our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brielle Skalark. I'm Brian Mackey. This is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.